Okay, so Matt asked me to preach on Mark 6. There's a lot of stories in Mark 6. So over the last few weeks, I've ran through a few titles that I could possibly use. The first one was Walking on Water, a Beginner's Guide, which would have been my A-level biology teacher's title, but I'm not actually good at walking on water, so still trying, still practicing, can't quite get it. This next one I thought was Jesus Opens the First Subway Franchise, for those who know what's coming. The next one I came up with was Five Cobs and Two Whale, a Jolly Fryer adaptation for those Kirkby locals. In case you don't know, the Jolly Fryer is a chip shop where they don't have fish, they have whale. But it's really fish. Okay, and then Making His Mark on Your Mission Field. I thought that's the title of my book when I write a book on this, yeah? probably cheesy, too cheesy. enough cheesy. This one was then getting closer to what I wanted to say, which is knowing Jesus is not enough. You have to know Jesus. And I thought, that's one of those vague things that preachers like to say that actually, if you read it on its own, it means nothing. So instead, I just went for Meet Jesus and Be Transformed, self-titled. You know, it's about time we had a preaching series with a, you know, self-titled album. Okay, so that's a bit of silly to start. So I thought I'd remind you of some of the context, because it's been a while since Matt gave us the context. So the context of Mark, I thought I gave it a little bit of a mark, being a teacher myself. I did what went well. He's got lots of use of literacy tools. He actually handed in his work before anybody else, so this is the oldest one of them. It's a bit of a swat. And it'd be even better if, for those who don't know UBI, he needs to find stronger ways to tie his story together. If you read the Gospels, some of them seem to spend a lot of time linking their stories together. Mark is just like, and then they walked here, and then they walked here. And then we walked here. Which is Mark. So I'm going to miss the first bit of Mark out, where of Mark 6, where Jesus goes home. The people there know him as Jesus, that little boy who wandered around, and he tries to do his thing, but ultimately Jesus is suppressed or withholds. It's not obvious. His healing ministry, there's not the impact that we see before and after. But as he wanders out from there, we get Mark 6, verse 6, where Jesus is stood with his disciples in a village, and he's just gone village to village healing people, having had that hard bit. He then calls his disciples to him, and he says, you two, I want you to go that way. I want you to go and actually do what I've been doing. I'm giving you authority over the impure spirits. You two, that way, right? There's impure spirits there. There's people who need healing there. There's people who don't know about me yet. Go that way. And he sent them out two at a time. And it says in verse 12, they went out and preached that people should repent. They drove out many demons and anointed many sick people with oil and healed them. Now, I'm not going to apologize for not reading the whole of that bit, because the bit in between is not what I want. It's this bit of, these guys have met Jesus. They've seen all the things that he can do. They then go out and they do it, right? They get on and they heal people. They anoint them. They saw Jesus driving out demons, and they go and they drive out demons. Now, at the moment, Jesus is sending them out in pairs, and I think this is significant. Next slide. Because we can't keep studying Jesus here, right? That doesn't work. If we just sit in here and we study Jesus and we get to know Jesus more, there's no point to it. We've actually got to go out there to be church. We could start a new village. We could call it the Ashwood Village. We could live on the Ashwood Village and we can all live happily and our children can grow up and we've got teachers and nurses and paramedics and, you know, accountants and all the things you need to start a stable society, of course. But that nothing would be changed, right? So if we're going to go out, Jesus sends them out in twos. And I think that's significant because when you've been in here, it's really safe, right? You guys are all okay. Like, if one of you does say something wrong, nobody's jumping down your throat. Please, if I say something wrong, don't kill me. But actually out there, sometimes we need somebody to back us up or to encourage us. Sometimes we need somebody to rebuke us, because maybe we're walking out there in the community and we need someone to say, actually, you know what, your actions are not reflecting Jesus right now. Or just back there, when you had that opportunity that you missed, what would Jesus have done? He probably would have anointed them. They probably would have been healed. And I think that's also really important, because early on, when you go out, there's lots of things to be disappointed about. There's lots of people telling you you're wrong. I think it's brilliant nowadays. We live in this like post-truth society where you can't be wrong unless you're a Christian, in which case you are wrong. You know, all my atheist friends are all up for inclusion until it's my opinion. Then they're jumping on me. And it's great when I've got one of my Christian brothers with me, or sisters, though they're not as often with me in these situations. And they can just say, actually, that is what the Bible says. That is what Jesus said. And that is what Owen is doing. And I think that's what we've got to start with. You know, because later on, Jesus sends them out, and to get to all four corners of the world, there might be times we have to go alone. But early on, let's go out in pairs. Where have we got to there? Lovely. And like, where are you going? So I'm not telling you all to go out, drop your stuff after the church, get in your cars in pairs, head off, two of you to Ravenshead, two of you to Kirkby, two of you to Stanton Hill, two of you Mansfield. I'm not saying that. So for me, tomorrow I'm going to work. Yesterday, I was in Windsor showing my dog. Last week, I was in an old church in Sutton playing card games. This is where I go. These are the places that God has sent me. These are the villages he's sent me to. And if you don't agree with that, you're wrong. I'm sorry. Because that's the world, right? That if I don't go to that dog show, there are literally no Christians in the 300 people who are in my breed, right? There's one who lives on a small island between here and Ireland who sometimes comes to shows, but there's none. 300 people, right? And they're stuck there all day. They're my captive audience. I've got the whole day to show them Christ, or not, right? Then that's my choice. So I'm going to go there and I'm going to show them Christ. When I'm stood at a tournament, and I've had it playing cards, and the guy opposite me has behaved atrociously. They've tried to cheat. They've tried to imply that I was cheating. And then afterwards, people come to me and they say, how did you stay so calm? How did you still treat them so politely? Why are you not bad-mouthing them now? Like, if that was me, I'd have been screaming swear words at them. And I'm like, that's Jesus. Because, like, he's changed me. Because that would have been me. Like, my mum and dad down here will tell you that growing up, competitive games did not end so well all the time. It was great if mum or Monopoly was banned. Still is, as far as we know. It's not come out since. It's almost embarrassing, but it's true. You know, you have to. I think that was me. Like, I'm not saying this as somebody who's like dreary and boring. I'm not somebody who's plays a card game and just goes, oh, look, snap. Like, I'm getting in there, even against little children. Sorry, Tobias, my 5 months old, he's not going to be winning for a while. Because as long as I can win, I'm going to. But I'm going to win right? I'm going to win how Jesus would have won. You know, I'm going to show, like, I'm going to point out my opponent might be wrong, they might be cheating, but I'm going to do it in the way that has integrity, that actually shows them love, that even though they deserve no honour, I'm going to give them some honour. I'm going to recognise where they did well. That's Jesus. Now, I'm not so good at the bit of, you know, putting oil on people and healing them. And maybe that's something I need to get better at. But I'm changing them in the way that God has blessed me so that I can change them. Now, I put on here, that meet with Jesus transforms the world we walk in. It transforms the world for the people we interact with as well. Because when I set the tone of Jesus in those places, the people around me unknowingly start setting the tone of Jesus more. when I'm at work, I'm a teacher with secondary school kids, and I don't badmouth kids when I'm calm. Sometimes I might in the staff room have a moan, right? But I try and keep my words about their actions and not about their person. And I try and start every lesson greeting my students talking about their person. Because when Jesus met the woman at the well and he described what she's done, you think, actually, like, he's changing her because she needed that. But for my people I meet every day, they've got people condemning them already. They need me to encourage them. And again, that's Jesus in me. Now, the next bit of the passage, these guys come back to Jesus. And it's the five cobs and two whale part of the story. Now, for those of you who are old school Ashwood, we have a song for this, so I thought I'd subject you to the children's song, which Janina's going to play. It has actions, if you know them, please share your actions. Claire sees it's coming. Beautiful. That saves us 5 minutes of reading the Bible. Which, just on a side note, it's strange being in church now, having every week we used to sing songs with very repetitive chord progressions with brilliant lyrics that taught you the Bible. I think we need some more of those. Any worship people want to start writing them? G, C, D, they're your three key chords with an A minor if you need to go somewhere different. So I thought that'd just be more fun than reading it. So the next slide then is, give me a moment. Just modernising it. If you're on the recording, it says, has that fish been tested for mercury? I can't eat that, I'm a vegan. Is that bread gluten-free? Obviously, you've all been in the character course, so you know that me using humour is okay, right? Roger said so. Right, so the disciples, they actually wanted to send the people away in that story. The song doesn't say it, but it is true, if you can check it if you want to. When the people had been there for 3 days listening to Jesus, so they probably had quite a lot of hunger going on. They may have taken a packed lunch, it didn't last that long. Now, to then go, okay, we're all hungry. They go to Jesus and say, they're all hungry, can we send them home? And Jesus says, no, you find what you've got. Now, in the song version, sadly, that's from one of the other versions of the story where there's a little boy. In this version, the disciples literally get their food out and they've got 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now, there's 3,000 people and they're like stood in a circle going, what we got? 5,000 people, yeah, yeah. 5 loaves, yeah, yeah. 2 fish, yeah. Who's telling Jesus? So it's almost an insult. You know, they're going to go to Jesus with 5 loaves and 2 fish, and Jesus is going to be like, No, that's stupid. How are we going to feed everybody? This is ridiculous. Why have you not got more food? It's probably how they approached him. Because at this point, they just didn't get Jesus, right? They didn't get where this was going. They didn't think Jesus maybe had a plan. And I think sometimes, maybe we're like that. And now being chair of the building team, I think I can say this is, you know, maybe we're like that with the building. We've got 1. Blah, million, let's say 2 million, because it's easy to say, pounds to get. We're currently at what, like 300,000, right? That's almost insulting to think that we could buy a 2 million pound building with 300,000 pounds. And if we go wandering around into like estate agents and property sellers and say, yeah, we want a 2 million pound building, we've got 300,000 pounds, yeah? So what can you do? We'll get laughed out the room, right? Except we've got Jesus, and he's going to increase it many times over. And we've got to believe that, and we've got to be praying it. And that's whether you've only got a quid left in your budget or whether you've got £1,000 left in your budget and you're dropping a quid or £1,000 into the pot. It doesn't matter, right? Increase many times over. It doesn't say increase times two. It's many times. And this time, 5 loaves and 2 fish to feed 5,000 people. If you think an average person might eat, what, a quarter of a loaf of bread, that's a lot of bread you're going to need, right? And we're looking for a similar scale factor with ours. A bit of math there for those of you who need your maths update. We've got to expect that Jesus is going to turn the miracle dial up to 11. We've got to expect that he's going to go, right, whatever you get, like honestly, whatever we get for the building is going to be enough. Like, and we've got to believe that because Jesus is going to take it and multiply it. It's not going to be enough because we're going to raise enough money. It's not going to be enough because of somebody who's going to magically come to God and they're going to be a millionaire. It's going to be enough because Jesus has got it sorted. So when we approach him, when we're praying, when we're thinking about it, we've got to not be like the disciples here. They met Jesus here and they still were putting limitations on him. They'd themselves received gifts of casting out demons and healing the sick, but they still couldn't believe that Jesus would have a solution to feeding a few people. And I think for all that we've seen, for everything that we've all seen as Christians, and some of us have seen some incredible stuff, we've got to not then say, well, that was just over there. You know, that was, yeah, I can believe that God can heal cancer, but I can't believe that God can finance my church. I could believe that God can change my university housemate so he's a Christian, but he certainly couldn't change my work colleagues. Like, let's not limit that, like these guys are doing right here. Meeting Jesus should transform what you think he can do. So then we come on to the third story that I've picked out of these. Rowan, could you come and read some Walking on Water stuff?
Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. When evening came, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars, because the wind was against them. About the fourth watch of the night, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass them by, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret and anchored there. As soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus. They ran throughout that whole region and carried the sick on mats to wherever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages, towns, or countryside, they placed the sick in the marketplaces. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched him were healed.
Fab. So that's three ways of reading the Bible, by the way. One, paraphrase. Two, sing songs. And third one is get Rowan to use her excellent reading voice to read it to you. Now, I'm going to address an elephant in the room. And it's this line here that's missing. So Matthew 12:28. "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." Now, those of us who have been around church a lot will know that in Matthew's version, Peter then hops out the boat and walks on water, starts to sing "Jesus saves him," etc. Revelation happens for Peter. And it's not here. Now, I'm not going to dodge that bit, because I know some church leaders would, because it's not literally the same thing written in two stories. And for some people, that undermines their view that the Bible should literally be true all the time. Now, that statement is strange, because the truth that you're talking about there is you're saying that to leave out a bit of a story makes it untrue. And I'm going to tell you that that's not true. And I'm... Janine, knock on. Because the Gospels are portraits, they're not photographs. This is an interpreted history. This is one person who is a writer, right? And we all know that writers often don't write down everything that happened the way it happened. You've all seen it when you're reading in school. You'd read something and they didn't tell you that, you know, Macbeth took one step, then he took another, then he took another, then he took another, and he walked downstairs and he opened the door and then he saw. They missed lots of bits out because it's not relevant to the story they're portraying. And this is Mark. And I'm going to tell you something about Mark. Mark actually doesn't care all that much about Peter and his like celebrityism or his importance to the stories. He's not actually interested in any individual disciple. He often writes about the feelings of the disciples as a whole. And I think that actually, in this story, if you put Peter's bit in, you're going to miss the bit that I'm now going to talk about because you're focused on Peter. So Jesus sent the lads away so that he can get on and pray, was my brilliant rhyme. Don't worry, I'm going to come back to talk about the bit I was just saying. So Jesus he's still got the crowds, he's still got thousands of people, and he sticks his 12 on a boat and sends them off somewhere, right? Purposeful, go. The reason why was because Jesus needed some time to pray. He needed some time alone. Jesus being Jesus, you think, actually, surely he's being filled with the Holy Spirit all the time. And, you know, surely he's never weak and he's never needing time alone. But actually, even Jesus does. There's a whole load of significance about why you might pick a mountain. But anybody who's ever prayed on a mountain... you might already have significance for praying on mountains. The perspective you get, you know, the wonder of God's creation. But actually, part of the reason why I think the mountain's important is because of what comes next. He sent the guys out. Now, he stuck them in a boat. Suddenly, they're in trouble. But it's the middle of the night. Right? So Jesus is sat up. They're probably on their boat with a little lantern on the front, rowing away. Right? And Jesus is watching them go. And then suddenly they stop. And they're rowing, and maybe they come back a bit because the wind's so strong. And then they're going a bit, and then they're coming back a bit, and then they're going out a bit. And to say that Jesus started praying for them at the start of the night, and then the phrase in a Rand's version was about the fourth watch, which is just before dawn. It's at this point that Jesus comes down the mountain. And so what are they doing? You know, they were willing to row all night because Jesus told them that way and row. And they're in so much struggle, but they're trusting that Jesus said go. And they probably know that Jesus is up on that mountain over there, and they're rowing away from Jesus while they're trying to. And as hard as they row, they're not really getting anywhere. But what they don't know, or what appears they don't know, is that Jesus is interceding for them all the time. Now, what you're doing in your daily struggles may feel like, no matter how hard you row, you're going nowhere. It might feel like, you know, you're aware of where Jesus is, but it feels like he's far away. It feels like he's not interested, and that you're doing what he said, and yet it's really hard, and you're feeling quite alone, and you're going nowhere. And know that Jesus is stood on a mountain interceding for you. Know that he is praying over you, watching your little lantern bob over the water. But that the next bit does happen. Jesus sees that they're in trouble, and he comes to them. He walks over the water, improbable, not actually scientifically impossible, if anybody cares. There are papers written now on how it's possible to walk on water, where two bodies of water flow together, it can create ice. Not something I would trust myself to do. I think I'll try Jesus' method first. And he walks across the water. He's going to them. Okay, and even then, so you think they'd be looking for him. They're in trouble. You think they'd be looking back, going, is Jesus coming to save the day yet? Is he coming yet? Is he coming yet? We're rowing and going nowhere. Is he coming yet? You'd think for all they've seen, that would be the first place they look, is actually to Jesus to save them. And instead, when this shape comes from the way they've just been, right, because they've been rowing away from him, when the shape comes, their first thought is fear. And part of this is because, and I wrote something which I read off a Messianic Jew, which means that you're a Jewish person who's been saved into Christianity, website, where they said, something you should know about Jewish people is they don't like water. The bigger the body, the scarier it is. And they put that Noah and then was saved, but you have to remember the rest of the world died, right? Fear one. Jonah goes out on a boat, ends up getting thrown into it and eaten by a fish. They are now more afraid. Then somebody goes and has a dream about a thing coming out of the water and destroying everybody, right? That makes it more scary. You know, even Moses parted the sea so that the Israelites didn't have to get their feet wet, right? This is how much they are not good at water. And suddenly they're in the water. It's dark just before dawn. Everyone says it's darkest just before dawn. That isn't true. Go and stay up tonight if you don't believe me. It is true. It is light before dawn, okay? But it's light enough that you'd have seen a silhouette rather than being able to identify that person. So they would have seen this shadow coming to them, and they're afraid. Meeting Jesus can be terrifying. Let me tell you that now. These disciples met Jesus, and they were terrified. Now, in the next slide, you'll see what this is the closest I could get to what's coming. And that's what they see. They're in the middle of a lake, and that's what they see coming towards them. For them, it was terrifying for that reason. For us, it can be terrifying for other reasons. It might be that you fear people who care for you. It might be you fear intimacy. It might be that you fear his correction because you're aware of your own sin. There's lots of reasons to fear God when you meet him. The Bible describes him as awesome. And we all like to say, that was awesome. I went for the weekend with my friends and it was awesome. And it wasn't awesome, was it? Because awe means inspires fear, right? And none of the weekends I've had with my friends have really inspired that much fear. Not the only that I can remember anyway. Maybe when I was surrounded by the police in Luxembourg with them pointing guns at us because we'd slept between an industrial estate and a posh people's housing estate. That was maybe a bit scary. But, you know, you've got to think that meeting Jesus can be scary and recognize it. You know, for some of the people that you're going to tell God about, Jesus is going to be scary to them because it's going to require sacrifice. It's going to mean acknowledge things they'll have done wrong. That can be scary. It could mean giving stuff up. It could mean changing their situation. It could be that actually they're more scared of being saved than they are of staying where they are and being condemned. I've certainly met more than one person where when I've explained to them how amazing God is, their response is actually, why do I need God? I'm all right here. And I've just explained why you need God. Like salvation, eternity, blessings, you know, riches in heaven, being physically healed from all of your sickness, having financial provision when you need it, like when you really need it, he's there for you all the time. That's who I've got. I've got a comforter. I've got the creator. And they're like, yeah, but why? Why do I? And you're like, what? It's safer to stay where they are. They're afraid of moving into all that. Their disappointment can be the fear of disappointment almost. What if it's not the way I thought? Thankfully for these disciples, Jesus doesn't take rejection. He walks across the water. I love it in the passage where it says, he nearly passed them by. As if he was like walking and he was just like, the boat's over there. And he's like, guys, I'm just going to walk all the way there. But that's not what it means. There's lots of stuff you can read around that. I just thought that's a funny one. So, recognize this. He didn't have to walk on water. He didn't have to get into the boat. He didn't have to stand with them to stop the storm and get them from A to B. He could have done all that from the mountain. He could have literally gone, bang, wind stops, or even turns, pushes the boat along. There they are, problem solved. But that's not Jesus, and that's not the Jesus I believe in. The Jesus I believe in, not only is he interceding for me up there, he's walking with me here. He gets into the boat with me. And he brings an answer to my prayers. He brings it from there to here. He says, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. He says that to me when he gets in my boat. And I know for some people in here, you've been through some pretty tough stuff recently. God's saying, or Jesus is saying, take courage, it's I, don't be afraid. He's sat in the boat with you. He's not just stopping dealing with the situation, he's with you, he's comforting you, right? Important to know that. And I also wrote here, Jesus was a long way away by foot. It takes a long time to walk that far, even over water. You know, so Jesus coming overnight, he was on the mountain, he sees the trouble, he's only there first break. He could have done it straight away. So maybe there was something to learn. Maybe after the occasion, when things have calmed down, we can reflect on the hard winds and recognize that actually, maybe it was that these guys needed some muscle work. Maybe there's other reasons. We'll talk about those in a minute. But in the next bit, it says they're completely amazed. And I'll pause for a moment. Shout it out if you spot it. Who's that disciple amazed by Jesus? Peter, yeah, because he's a rock. Yeah, there you go. So, this is just how my brain works. I plan a preach, and then I look for ways I can sneak cheesy puns and bad jokes in. Or I buy the bad jokes and then plan the preach around it. So the disciples didn't get it, it says. The disciples didn't get it. So he's walked to them, he's got in the boat, he's solved the problem, he sat there, and it says the disciples didn't understand. He actually had to do it because the disciples didn't get the last bit. And I was reading one commentary, and the way the commentary was written just reminded me so much of the Monty Python Life of Brian sketch, where they've got the Israelites sat in a house talking about, I think it was the disciples themselves, talking about, what have the Romans done for us? The aqueduct. Well, yeah, the aqueduct. But what have they done except for the aqueduct? Sanitation. Well, other than sanitation. And this is what this read like. It read like the disciples there going, rowing away. And they're like, Jesus has sent us and it's really hard. And what has Jesus ever done for us? Well, there was the bread just now. Well, yeah, other than the bread, the healing of the sick. Well, he's done the healing of the sick, but other than those, what has he ever done for us? Well, the nets, where he filled our nets with fish. What, other than the nets? You know, all these things, and they still didn't get it. They didn't get what Jesus had done for them, and they didn't get what he could do. They weren't looking for what Jesus was going to do, and they were limiting what Jesus could do. I've not spoken to Paul this week, but Paul's prayer before the meeting involved talking about not putting limitations on Jesus. And that's exactly what I've written about all on this, is these guys have experienced Jesus do all kinds of miracles. Some of them were natural miracles, like filling nets with fish. Some of them were supernatural, like casting out demons. Some of them were healing lepers. Some of them were healing just the regular sick folk. Some of them were touching cloth and magically being healed. You know, they still didn't get it. They just didn't get that their Jesus was capable of anything. And it's, upon reflection of this, it made me wonder, where am I not praying for miracles because I'm not convinced that Jesus can do a miracle in that area? And when I was thinking this, I thought, you know, there's this, the funny trade-off between the people who pray for parking spots and the people who say that that's trivial. And I think, maybe we need to stop thinking things are trivial. Like, just as I've challenged you all about raising money for this building, I also want to say, like, that parking spot's important. Because if that changes your day, if your legs are really aching because, you know, the wear and tear on you, for whatever reason, then Jesus cares about that. So there's no reason he wouldn't provide a parking spot near to Morrison's front door, right? There's no reason why he wouldn't find a seat for you on a train. There's no reason why when you're walking around Kirkby and you're feeling really thirsty and you've got no cash, he wouldn't just have somebody walk up to you who's one of your friends who happens to have a spare drink, which is what happened to me yesterday. You know, I was absolutely famished and so thirsty, hadn't drank in about 3 hours, and I was just walking through Kirkby, doing as I do, playing Pokemon. Shout out to all the Pokemon players, just me. There was about 11 of us, and none of us had any money, none of us had any drink, and we bumped into one of the girls who's got a little boy, and she was like, "Oh, you don't need drinks." And I was like, "I was just praying for that. I was thinking I'm a little bit too thirsty, getting a bit dizzy." She had drinks for everyone. Jesus cares about that. He cared about my thirst, self-caused. I could have planned and got taken a drink. So let's not limit him. Because meeting Jesus can take a few goes for us to comprehend him. So, and I'm sure Gary's going to smile because he's thinking it's taken me a lot of goes to and not comprehended him yet, which is where a lot of our life group conversations go, is even after a long time, you won't have fully comprehended God, but don't add limitations to him. Then we get to the other side, and we get to have a comparison now. So the comparison is this. These disciples, if you've seen everything that Jesus has done, who have then been commissioned to do so much, are still not getting it. The comparison is the regular folk who Jesus is healing the sick so much, they're fetching more sick to stick in the villages in front of him so that he can heal those sick. And you see it a lot when you get like new Christians come in and they're willing to pray for everything and they pray with such passion and all the time. And we have to be careful that we don't lose some of that. You know, let's fetch more sick. Like when we're done praying for Claire and Catherine, let's wheel some more out, right? I don't want to create more sick. I want to go and get the existing sick, get them here, get them healed, get them back out again, right? Stick them in a church, we'll have life groups, we'll expand. And I think actually that bit, because when you first read it, I don't know about you guys, but it almost just felt like it was the next bit chronologically what happened. But I think it's important because Mark picks, he's willing to leave out the Peter bit, but he puts this in. So he must have put it in for a reason. And for me, it's this. It is, go and fetch more sick. Let's do it. Let's go and find some poor people who need God's blessing. Let's go and find some of the people who have been hurt emotionally. Let's go and find some of the broken families. Let's bring them here and let's pray for them to be healed. Let's have them restored. Let's have people lifted out of poverty. And it's quite a bold thing, but it is the first natural reaction when you see how powerful Jesus is to go and fetch more sick. Okay? It's natural to then go out and be telling everybody. The woman at the well again, once she worked out who Jesus was, she went and told everyone. Right? That's your natural reaction to Jesus. Let's call each other up on the opposite. If we're sat in the boat with our fellow brothers and sisters, if they're responding to Jesus in fear and trembling, or they're rowing and they're not thinking about Jesus and where Jesus is, let's call it out. We're in the safe community. You might be out in pairs, right? Let's call it. Let's go, Claire. You know what? I think you've just got your eyes on what you're doing right now. Lift them up. Like, where's Jesus? What's he doing? Is he walking across to you? Is he coming to solve it? I think that's important there. So, going towards the end, drawing things back together. Let's look for ways that we can partially meet someone's need and pray for God to meet the rest. And let's expect him to meet the rest, right? Whatever it is. Let's take time alone to pray. Jesus did it. It must be good. be ready to be sent, whether in twos or as a team. You know, and this started with him being sent out in twos. He sends them out as a group of 12. Later on, he sends them out in other groups. Let's recognize Jesus, particularly his authority and power. This is what Mark stresses the whole way through, is Jesus' authority, his power, right? Let's not add limits, okay? He's a limitless God, and Jesus is God, so we're all right there. And encountering Jesus can invoke fear, or it can send you running with enthusiasm, right? Let's be aware that those states are possible. Let's acknowledge it, and let's try and push for the second of those. So I've put up there the things that I wrote in my notes but maybe forgot to say along the way in case I didn't say them. So meeting Jesus transforms your world. It transforms your view on what he can do. Meeting Jesus can lead to hardship. These guys were sent to do something that was quite difficult. Meeting Jesus must be done more than once. Right? Can't just do it once and then go off and it's all right. Right? We need to be regularly spending time with him. It can be scary. But Jesus brings calm to the situation, okay? And that's all I've got for today.